the truth. There's so much that way. Even 100,000 years help us. Now we can see and hear. We can remember and accept. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself.
Amish the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. After getting for a rest for a few days, in this coming week I'm hoping to continue my talks I've been doing, seemingly interminably, some might think. I wouldn't blame them if they do. On how to grow lotus blossom. We're about 2/3 of the way through the text that has to do with our master's Kensho in 1976 and 77. But as a kind of preface to the coming chapters, or perhaps as a kind of footnote to the previous ones, I want to say a few words about two subjects. That I have been referring to all along. The first of these subjects is the phrase that I'm using a lot, the true spirit of the precepts. I've been emphasizing very strongly the spirit of the precepts. I haven't paused much to talk about why I'm using those words. I thought of a little analogy from secular law. And although the precepts are certainly not rules or certainly not laws in the way the world understands these things, at all. Nonetheless, the analogy has some validity. We all know that it's illegal to run a red light, to drive through a red light. Let's imagine that we're parked at a red light. There's no traffic. There's no one on the road coming in either way, so we could just drive right across the street and ignore the red light. We're not going to hurt anyone by doing that. But most of us don't do that. We sit there at the red light. Of course, nowadays they have cameras to catch you, and that's an additional incentive to being honest there. But we all know that it's simply, even if you don't see someone, it's simply too dangerous and irresponsible to be deciding that in this particular case, the red light doesn't apply. So, you know, responsible people generally sit there at that red light even in the middle of the night when there's no one else around. You know, and with good reason. You never know when there might be someone you're not seeing who's about to launch off across, walking across the intersection, and you might mow them down when you're looking for cars. You know, we're human beings, and it's better to err on the side of following the law and respecting the law and respecting its purpose. We all know that the stoplight system, it has the purpose of protecting us and does a pretty good job of it. It would be chaos without it. Well, let's imagine that in this particular situation, there's something going on up ahead of us. Say we can see it, you know, a couple hundred yards up ahead, that if we were to go through that red light, we could really help someone. Imagine any number of situations. Suppose it's some car stalled on a railroad track and the train's coming. All we have to do is come along and give it a push with our car, and it doesn't get mowed down by the train. So we have a little moral dilemma here. You're sitting at the red light. There's no apparent risk in running the red light, but we know it's illegal. So I'm going to presume that most of us would do the more sensible and compassionate thing and go ahead and drive through that red light and go help in that emergency. But if you don't, you haven't broken the law, as I understand it. You might be sued by someone, and of course, a civil suit can be raised in a matter that doesn't have to do with the breakage of a law. At least not in the more rigid sense. But you do have the choice to sit there at that light, red light, and say, you know, it's against the law to go through this red light. I know that those people might benefit from my help, but I'm not going to be a lawbreaker. So I would call this adhering to the spirit, or to the letter of the law, and being blind to the spirit of the law. Because after all, what is the law for? The law is to exist to help and protect people. So if one adheres to the letter and yet grossly neglects the possibility to help and protect, one is keeping the law in a literal sense and breaking it in spirit. This is why I keep talking about the spirit of the precepts. You know, all you have to do to be a person who literally keeps the precepts is just to do nothing whatsoever. Just don't do anything. And don't have any thoughts either. That's important. You know, just be a carrot. And you're keeping the precepts perfectly. In a literal sense. But as soon as you have to act, you have to make choices. And as soon as you have to act in difficult, dangerous, either literally physically dangerous or spiritually dangerous situations, you know, you're having to make choices, and some of those choices are hard choices. You know, any parent knows this. Can there be anything more bewildering than having to deal with a teenager? I've often thought, you know, what would I do if I had a teenage kid who was anything remotely like I was? You know, I have to be honest with myself. I would not know what to do. I have a lot more compassion for my parents, especially my father, who I really resented when I was a teenager, and of course really loved. But could anyone have been good enough for me at that time? Since I wasn't good enough for myself, which is, of course, the real problem. The important thing is the precepts don't just go out the window in the presence of such complexity and difficulty. But it rigidly attempting to adhere to a literal interpretation has to go out the window if we're actually going to be able to act. Sometimes it's actually really much better to just outright make a mistake than to do nothing. hear the distinction that Reverend Massey used to talk about that the Christians have between sins of commission and sins of omission come in. At least if you've done a sin of commission, you can see you actually did something and this is a consequence. Whereas if you're always doing sins of omission, you can easily convince yourself, and such people do convince themselves, people who just, you know, almost wholly try to do nothing as a solution to life's problem, you convince yourself, well, I didn't do anything, so, you know, how can I be at fault? How can I have a responsibility here? But, of course, it doesn't work like that. There's karmic consequence functioning whether we do something or not. Or perhaps it's better to say the choice not to do something is just as much a choice and an act. So clearly we have to go beyond the letter. Reverend Massey used to talk not infrequently of the Zen master sometimes breaking a precept in order to keep a deeper precept. And she didn't restrict it just to Zen masters, some special class of people who had their act together, supposedly. But she spoke of it in relationship to all people. Every time we take a breath, we kill, you know, millions, maybe billions of microbes that are in the air. Every time we wash our hands. So obviously we can't literally keep the precept, do not kill. We have to look for what is the spirit of the precept. And of course the three pure precepts help us with that. You know, don't go on a wanton rampage of slaughter. Now, don't willfully kill. And then if you scratch a little deeper, well, it's talking about reverence for life. And if you scratch a little deeper, well, what is our true life? And with each of the precepts, you will eventually come to the eternal. And to the fundamental necessity and importance to live our life in a straight line with the eternal to the best of our ability, in alignment with the eternal. Rules of temples, of religious orders, rules of society, they have to be understood similarly. There's no magic formula one can chant. I literally kept the rules, for example, being one of them. I literally kept the rules. There's no magic formula we can chant that somehow obliterates the functioning of the law of karma. This throws us back upon really asking, really listening to our heart. And this, of course, is the true spirit of the precepts. Asking, listening, offering in willingness, waiting patiently in stillness, following with a generous and glad heart. The other subject that I want to speak briefly about has to do with the fact that now that in this series of talks I'm doing, we've reached the latter part of how to grow lotus blossom, and we're talking about the teachings that are revealed through a master through some quite extraordinary and beautiful spiritual experiences. I've noted in myself over the years, in retrospect, I see that at the time in the monastery, when we were training with Reverend Master, going through this, and each of us going through a deep spiritual process ourselves. You couldn't be with her in that monastery at the time without either joining in or leaving. And many people did leave at the time. But as I remember, most of the people who left actually left when River Master was out of the hellish realms and was in the heavenly realms. And it just clicked with me recently. Well, most of us are much more familiar with the hellish realms than with the heavenly ones. That is, you know, we know our suffering, don't we? But when someone starts talking about flying up columns of light and strolling around in the Buddha land and this kind of thing, well, that leaves my experience mostly behind. Not entirely for me. I've been training many years now, and I try to indicate at places where I've had the experiences of the Master speaking of in my own way. Some of the things he's talking about, I simply have not experienced. I've never, to my knowledge, been doing any strolling in Buddha lands or gone up any columns of light. I don't think of my life as any the poorer for it, nor did Reverend Master, as far as I know. But when she talked about the hells, well, I recognize that hell. Oh, I recognize that one. I've been there. I know that despair. I know that fear. I know that self-doubt. Even if it's unpleasant and difficult and dark and painful, we know that stuff. But when we get into being infused with golden light again and again, being embraced in the temple in the Buddha land by the Shakyamuni Buddha, most of us don't as yet have that experience. Maybe in this lifetime we never will. Maybe that's just not needed for many of us. When we get outside our zone of when we get outside our zone of familiarity in experience, especially when the stakes are as high as they are in a spiritual life, at the level at which we're master speaking of it, it can get scary. At least for some of us. And here again I would remind people what River Master herself emphasized. The important point, the reason why these things are being shared with us, is because of the teaching. I may not have had certain experiences, but I don't have to be any Einstein to see the teaching least something of the teaching that River Master herself is so often explaining in these experiences. My job in this series of talks I'm doing is try to share with people this exquisite, profound teaching, this life-transforming teaching, and to myself again have the privilege, and really at the deepest level that I've ever had it, as I go through these talks, of finding both a profound gratitude and appreciation, and also just practical help in my training, in the teachings that are so richly embodied in how to grow a lotus blossom. In the end, I would do these talks for me and one other person. And that person could simply be a theoretical person, as far as I'm concerned. It means that much to me. And it is the only talk I've ever done that I can remember where I've been so emotionally affected as I've done them. I think people can hear that at times. Something I haven't been able to help. The profundity of gratitude for this precious teaching and for someone who so magnificently and in such a human way pointed to the deepest truth and lived it. You know, words cannot express what that means. So I'd like to encourage all of us to relax when we're in the areas that really seem to be outside of our experience. And I hope that, you know, with the Eternal's help, and I have to say that before I do each talk, I ask for help, and ask for help seriously, so that I can point out at least some of the areas in which there actually is more overlap with your ordinary daily experience than you might think. At least I find that for myself.